Mukunda in his presentation and shows us that Mukunda is no ranting fanatical fool. He's brought up these issues, and they're issues that I'm personally concerned with. I mean, you know, ISKCON's not only a trend, but, you know, pretty well they've taken the exit and all these off the main highway of Krishna consciousness, pluralism, academia, secular education, interfaith, liberalism. These are our really disturbing signs of, you know, religiosity taking over completely the Sankirtan movement, the pure Sankirtan movement that Srila Prabhupada as the Sampradayacharya has and did, you know, at least plant the seeds. You know, during Prabhupada's Leela period, of course, you know, those who got involved at the very beginning when Prabhupada began his preaching in New York were those who helped him were not, as far as I understand, not 100% Jewish by any means, but there was, you know, without their, you know, contribution, you know, it would be a lot different story. And so they spontaneously, or they would agree to be part of Prabhupada's Leela, not understanding who Prabhupada, you know, what his spiritual position was and what they're getting themselves into in terms of being participants in his Leela as such. But all in all, I mean, that point is well placed as well by Urdhvakeshu, that it was Krishna's arrangement that Srila Prabhupada be sent or, you know, instructed to come to New York. And in the hearts of all the living entities who you came forward, stepped forward to help Srila Prabhupada in those days, you know, that's also Krishna's, you know, mercy and arrangement. So all in all, if one wants to refer back to those days, then certainly one cannot fault find, or one cannot say, well, you know, make any statement whatsoever in regards to the sincerity and the potency of these persons. But, you know, when it came time for Prabhupada's departure, and then, you know, we all know the story there, that the Zonal Acharyas, you know, why would these particular persons agree amongst themselves, 11 of them, that they should be the ones that participate solely and wholly in this Zonal Acharya circumstance? Of course, most of them did have zones, and we were well established in those zones, especially, of course, Kirtanananda. What to speak of, you know, Jayapataka, and to a certain degree, Hridayananda and Tamal Krishna, they all had these, where they were, you know, a few steps away from being Zonal Acharyas before they even came up with the concept. Now, unfortunately for, in my bad karma, is that, you know, Prabhupada had sent Hansaduta down to Ravana's kingdom in Sri Lanka and isolated him there because he was a constant embarrassment and troublemaker. And I think Prabhupada thought he's demoniac, which I solely believe he is. But, you know, they, in order to, because his name was on the list, that was the only thing that could distinguish them from others, is they were on that same list the Rithviks use as the letter that Tamal Krishna wrote up and sent to the temples, which we shrugged off to mostly, put it on the bulletin board, never thought about it. You know, maybe, you know, made the devotees aware of what was going on. But to put all the significance, first of all, establishing the Zonal Acharya system, and then secondly, adopted by the Rithviks as their proof positive But going back to this whole issue, I mean, so there were so many Jews disproportionately involved in that original era. And it's a fact that, you know, all of them, I mean, no one went overboard more than Kirtananda, in my mind. I mean, up to the point he killed somebody. Now, it's true that, and then there's, of course, Bhagawan was the Sun King of Europe and really got into the role. And of course, Tamal Krishna as well. But the fact is that Rameshwar, for instance, was, I think, the most low key of them, all the Zonals. And he's just, you know, Jewish, you know, as they come. And now, but I, you know, what I feel is the problem that we're experiencing today, though. I want to go to that, you know, position, because I talk about the past, but in the present situation, I think with most leaders and most devotees to a degree, you know, after Prabhupada left and the Leela wound up, and persons had to either surrender to Prabhupada as in the way that one would surrender to, you know, to Krishna and the Sampradaya, but, you know, recognizing him as for what he really is, a Sampradayacharya. The more offenses that we commit out of ignorance, out of foolishness, out of, you know, contamination due to the modes in Kali Yuga, the more we revert back to our original sort of destiny, our fate, our karma. And if you know, prior to becoming a devotee, were, you know, from Jewish background, which is a distinctly different upbringing, relatively speaking, than most, you know, most persons, you know, of other, you know, cultural and religious backgrounds, especially if it's in a concentrated, you know, Jewish, you know, community such as New York. Well, anyway, you go back to that. You go back to that mentality. You revert gradually back to, even though you're a sannyasi, a guru, you know, a friend of mine I talked to just recently pointed out that the GBC for New York, who is, of course, from the Jewish background, has become a money lender. He goes around lending money to different temples up to the tune of $100,000 or more at interest. Of course, Sri Dayananda, you know, he's gone back to being a professor, which and undoubtedly that's where he would be if he wasn't a devotee or hadn't joined Prabhupada's movement. You know, I can go on in this way. But I'm just saying that once you start sliding back into your original sort of mindset, ethnicity, religious thought, then that influence or that background or that cultural conditioning comes out in the decisions you make, the actions you take, and you know that has to, you know, impact the whole movement. Why, if you're the leader, it's going to impact the whole movement, everyone you come in contact with. You know, for instance, these sannyasis, they are now setting a whole new, like, unshastra-like definition of what a sannyas can and can't do, or how they can act. I mean, this has now become condoned and is become the standard. You can have big bank accounts, you can have your own, you know, apartments and establishments throughout the world. You can fly first class. You can all these things. You can lend money to people. You can take money so that you can go to you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars from Prabhupada's movement, so that you can go to university, get a PhD, and do nothing with it other than get a job. I don't see any papers. I don't, from all those academics, I don't see any, as of course Mukunda pointed out, where are these documents? You know, where is the PhD thesis from Tamal that cost Prabhupada thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars? And of course, we read what he wrote, No one's denying he didn't write it. And this, you know, this is seriously impacting the movement. I mean, Tamal Krishna, you know, now will, you know, have, besides probably Jayapataka when he leaves his body, the biggest samadhi in Mayapur, which, you know, the movement's spending umpteen millions of dollars on as a focal point. So everything he did, everything he said, because he's been enshrined in this way, and he's been glorified to this day in ISKCON in this way, everything he said cannot be dismissed unless you say it's actually Maya. And if you say it's Maya, then why make him out to have such a glorious death and a glorious samadhi compared to anybody else? So anyway, this is some of the things that, of course, are impacting the movement in a very, to my mind, negative way. You know, I can hear Nisingananda's voice when I read his instant response to Mukunda, because, of course, Nisingananda is a good friend of mine, and I admire him greatly for his service, and we have a similar service in many respects. You know, he was, at the time, a very good friend of Rameshwar. I can only say that, you know, Mukunda's response, you know, I hope Nisingananda or any of those who disagree, who are, you know, feel that they have, can champion that position, to respond to it. But, you know, Mukunda's observations, which are not so well researched, and are an interesting discussion point, even from an academic's point of view. Like, for so many of these persons, like Hridayananda and Rabindra Sarup and some of these other PhD types, why don't they give us an academic appraisal or an academic assessment of these, you know, facts? These are sort of sociological facts. These aren't, you know, just, you know, bigoted and very much, you know, slanted in such a way as to create the wrong impression. You know, these are very interesting statistics. And if you're in academia, you're supposed to be neutral and just to look at this phenomenon and try to give it some, you know, sociological reality. You know, I try to be honest, and I have had some thoughts on this subject. You know, recently, you know, I've had a bad experience with Bir Krishna, who is, of course, in that category. But I've had a worse experience with Hari Vilas, who's an Armenian. It's so, you know, and he has websites up there which are 100% Armenian. He really identifies with his, you know, ethnicity. Of course, one of the persons, of course, that got me the most amount of trouble, you know, locally and in my own devotee association life, is my critiques and, you know, criticism of Radhana Swami, who's also in that category, you know, and by far, at this point in time, has one of the biggest influences on the movement, more than anyone else, in my estimation. So anyway, that's my thoughts on this subject, and I hope it doesn't go on forever, because of course this is one of the great, you know, sore spots in Western culture at this particular point in time, the plight or the circumstances with those of Jewish or, you know, beliefs or culture. The Israeli-Palestinian issue is still the super hot button, and then probably the epicenter of a lot of the strife on the planet. And the American economy has been seriously impacted. So to bring up the issue in this way is going to cause, and in the context of ISKCON and Hare Krishna movement, you know, is going to cause some reaction. Of course, we know what happened in the 40s in Germany, and throw Europe under the Nazis, and you know that will serve as a rallying point for all those persons of that, you know, who were persecuted under those circumstances. But the one thing that I've come to notice or come to realize in the Shastra and hearing Prabhupada himself is that these, you know, going right back to the Bhagavad Gita in the Battle of Kurukshetra, that there's very little, you know, sentiment for persons who leave their body under whatever conditions, either on the battlefield or through different types of wars. I heard Prabhupada comment on the India-Pakistan war, and his only comment, not that millions of people lost their lives, but that, you know, it was a huge waste of money. People are going to lose their lives and die, and that's the one absolute truth of the material world. So, not that I'm trying to say that I in any way condone or have any sympathy for what, I mean, I'm totally unsympathetic or sentimental towards what happened during World War II and those concentration camps and so on. You know, but you have to take the position of a devotee. I mean, you have to take the perspective of the Shastra and of the Guru. And in this respect, you know, the perception that I get is that they weren't sentimental. And that was, of course, Arjuna's biggest problem, right from the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He was too sentimental towards his family members, towards his ethnicity, towards his religion, towards all the things other than just Krishna. And for us, we know who Krishna is. We know who Prabhupada is. We know what Sankirtan movement, Lord Chaitanya are, and we know what we should be doing. You know, we know what fighting means. So what's stopping us from fighting is sentimentality. And having, you know, a strong sentiment towards being a Jew or a Armenian or a Canadian or a British or whatever, or Australian, it doesn't, you know, that's all Maya. That's what's keeping us from fighting and cooperating together under the banner of the Sampradayacharya to spread Krishna consciousness collectively and successfully throughout the world. You know, the test is, are you really serving Prabhupada? And if so, you know, your actions and your words will show it. And of course, you have to, screen out the sentiment that those who don't really have that mentality but find it very conducive to develop their own persona, their own personality, your cult. So you see Jaya Prabhupada and, you know, I love Prabhupada and Prabhupada Ki Jai and so on. But they don't make any attempt to try to preach like Prabhupada, chant like Prabhupada, set up their organizations like Prabhupada. That's the real proof. And to my mind, it's the preaching. You know, I make a daily habit of listening to a lot of Prabhupada lectures and morning walks and the classes, of course, and room conversations. And when I listen to the leaders preach, I don't even see any attempt. During the Prabhupada Leela days, all the leaders, when they gave the classes, they were trying to, you know, project the image that this is just like Prabhupada. They quoted slokas, they stuck to, you know, what Prabhupada said, what the purport said. But now it's totally different. It's just like storytelling has become the big, you know, technique of preaching, and being dramatic storytellers, which of course Prabhupada never was. And yes, that attracts more people. So if Prabhupada had been like that, there's a good chance he would have been, you know, far more successful in India, for instance, before he left. But he insisted, he stuck to the Bhakti Siddhanta style of preaching, which it appears that the leaders aren't doing. So thank you very much.